Here's Andy Udman.
You know, the other thing that you find in the archaeological record is that humans are long and tall and strong, and they keep all their teeth and their bones are disease-free until you hit agriculture. And then suddenly everybody shrinks 6 inches and they lose their teeth and their bones are riddled with disease.
Whoa.
And we have a concept, the diseases of civilization. There is no such thing as the diseases of hunter-gatherers.
Pam, let me ask you about this book, Skinny Bitch. What is it all about?
Basically, the book is promoting a vegan diet, which means a diet that doesn't contain any animal foods. And unfortunately, this book is targeting young women, young teenage girls today, for example. And what these young teenage girls don't realize, that if they follow the advice of this book, that what they will be doing is compromising their fertility. And this, of course, is very, very dangerous information to pass on to any human being, let alone young teenage girls.
Well, I hope I never end up in a canoe or a boat of any kind with Pam Colleen, because what she does best is rock the boat, and she is going to do that this morning. I had a prepared introduction to what I was going to say today, introducing this topic, but Pam and I were just chatting during the news, and you said something I found just astounding. We are about to interview the author of a book called The Vegetarian Myth.
Mm-hmm.
She describes herself, you describe yourself as a recovering vegetarian. Liere Keith is her name. She describes herself as a recovering vegan. You were just quoting some numbers, which I found astounding, some of them in this book, about the likelihood of birth defects for women who are vegetarians.
That's right.
I had never heard that.
Yeah. Oh, no. It's in the literature and it's out there. I mean, it's tragic that I have to do this, but a lot of women who come to me who were vegetarian or vegan when they were pregnant, or imposed this diet on their children. Unfortunately, what I see is these children end up with learning disabilities, speech impediments, epilepsy, all sorts of problems simply because of all the malnutrition that is associated with a vegetarian and or a vegan diet.
Wow, folks, if you get nothing else from this hour, there's a thought that you may want to pursue, wrap your mind around, and do research on. The suggestion that birth defects and a host of other medical issues, that the risk of them is higher if your mother was a vegetarian. Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Why don't we hear this stuff in the mainstream media?
Well, I certainly didn't know it when I was a vegan. All I heard was about all these wonderful attributes about a vegan diet back in the 90s when I was a vegan. And I wasn't told about any serious health consequences that could ensue. And, of course, when the 9 years that I was a vegan, I believed that it was a healthier diet and that it was going to indeed contribute to my improved health. And, of course, towards the end of the time that I was a vegetarian, it kept making me sicker and sicker and sicker. And I couldn't connect the dots, Andy, because I was being told it was a healthy diet. So I couldn't see that the diet was indeed contributing to my ill health. And this is a very common thing that I see among vegetarians, that they're not well, that they have poor memory, that they have low libido, that they have poor energy, depression, anxiety, sleep disorders, and so on. But they don't contribute it to, they don't look at the diet as being a contributing factor.
Again, that old expression, there is none so blind as he who will not see. Would you introduce our guest this morning?
Oh, it would be an honor. This morning we have Liere Keith on the line, and she is the author of the groundbreaking book, The Vegetarian Myth. Good morning, Liere.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Let me just explain your name, Liere, if I could. The way Pam put it to me, just think Pierre and change the P to an L. Does that work for you?
That is absolutely correct, and then it's a mnemonic device, and you'll never forget it.
Well, thank you for that. The vegetarian myth, Liere, let's get right to the bottom line. What is the vegetarian myth?
You know, I always like to start this conversation by emphasizing that the values that underlie the vegetarian ethic are not the problem. So I think most people are drawn to this diet because of concerns about planetary well-being, because of concerns about justice, because they feel compassionate. And this is a dietary practice that is held up to be, you know, the diet that matches those principles. And it's not the principles that are at fault. I think we have the values right. The problem is information. And this is a vast cultural ignorance about the nature of agriculture and what agriculture is and what it's done to the planet.
Before you get too far into it, let me just ask you this. What is most people's reaction when people say to them, okay, so Sally meets Betty, and Betty says, I'm a vegetarian. What is Sally's likely reaction? I know what mine is. Wow, what tremendous discipline. They don't eat those greasy hamburgers. She's a vegetarian. She eats broccoli and Brussels sprouts. I admire her so much, and I'm sure she is so healthy. Is that how the other woman is likely to react, Lierre?
I think it depends who it is, who that other person is. I think absolutely from a certain kind of subset of the population, you do get a kind of moral shine because, you know, you're doing this, you know, this self-denial. You're doing something that's supposed to be good for the planet and good for your health, and, you know, self-control is involved. So you get a whole bunch of sort of moral points for doing that. And that's sort of, I think, on the left or among environmentalists. I certainly want to acknowledge that if you do something like vegetarianism or veganism, that a lot of mainstream people just think you're a freak. So there can certainly be hostility, you know, when you bring up the fact that you're a vegan or a vegetarian. And I think that that lets the vegetarian community feel very embattled. So they always feel like they're under attack. And that is, I think, one reason why, you know, a book like mine just feels like more of the same. And so I think a lot of people react negatively who perhaps could really use the information that's in the book is because they feel like, oh, it's just another attack on, you know, this embattled community. So I think it depends who it is that you're speaking to, because that's certainly true that there's, you know, this sort of a moral high ground that they've claimed, and that a lot of people will see the moral territory. But at the same time, it is always hard to be a little bit out of the mainstream. So I think both things are true, and it sort of depends who you're talking to.
Well, let's just carry that on for just a bit, because you're on the theme now of a militant attitude. Pam was telling me that it works the other way, too. Not only do non-vegetarians sort of have a militant attitude towards vegetarians, but vegetarians can be rather militant when they see someone like you calling yourself a recovering vegetarian. In fact, not just with words, but Lierre, just share with us, if you would, this incredible moment when you were physically attacked by vegetarians.
Yeah, I was speaking at the Anarchist Book Fair in San Francisco, and I was assaulted on stage by three vegans. And I get death threats all the time, and I just sort of have to live with, they're trying to create fear so that I'll shut up. And I don't give in to bullies, so I'm not going to stop speaking. But that is absolutely one of, there's certainly a minority of them that this is, they think that this is appropriate. That, you know, I mean, I was raised by a librarian, and my mom, and, you know, if I don't like a book, I take it back to the library. You know, I don't think it's appropriate to assault people because you don't like what they're saying. But some of them seem to think that this is okay.
And, tell me about the attack. You were, like, physically attacked. Tell me about the moment and what you were attacked with and by whom.
Well, the perpetrators were never caught, though just from sort of word of mouth behind the scenes, we do have some of their names, but there's not anything. Nobody's going to do anything about this, so... anyway, there were three of them. I was speaking, before an audience, and they came at me from behind. I guess there was an open door behind the stage where they were able to gain access to the building, and I didn't see them. They came from behind, and so they had, some kind of, I don't know what it was, some kind of substance that they had in pie dishes. I don't know what it was, but anyway, but the one thing we do know is that it was so saturated in some kind of chili oil, some kind of capsicum pepper stuff. And so they slammed it all over my face and all over my head. It got in my eyes. It got in my ears. It's just a really horrible thing to do to people. And this is not a fair fight. You know, they came at me from behind. There were three of them. And the point was to hurt and humiliate. And to my mind, people who take up, you know, some kind of vegetarian practice, I mean, we were supposed to be the people who were against domination and against cruelty and sadism. And this was absolutely a sadistic thing to do to somebody. And, you know, again, you don't like my book, you don't have to read it.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people in the vegan community took this up, and they are totally for it, and they supported it. And, you know, you can go online and read all about it and read their comments.
Mm-hmm.
And I just, the whole thing is just, it really set me back because I thought at least we had some values in common. You know, even if we took different information, ended up in different, with different conclusions about the appropriate human diet, you know, that can happen in a civil manner. And we all want the same thing. We want a healthy planet. We want healthy children. We want strong, local, healthy, you know, economies and local communities. We may disagree about how to get there, but there's a set of values that are about justice and compassion that we mm-hmm. agree to. And with something like this, it's quite clear that that's not what they're after.
I'm sorry that happened to you, Liar. I had a very similar experience at a book launch that I did where a group of vegetarians came in and were screaming and yelling and acting extremely irrationally. And, you know, I think that you and I really do come from a place where we want to warn them and kindly and gently and say that, you know, a lot of this information that you're hearing around vegetarianism is dangerous information. And you can lead to a lot of malnutrition and behavior problems simply because the diet is so deficient.
Pam, you ran into this. Let me just ask you, why are they so hostile? I mean, mm-hmm. isn't this just a discussion about nutrition?
Well, part of it is, I think, this dogmatic type of attitude, this sort of a very religious attitude around vegetarianism. And a second element is indeed that they are so malnourished. I mean, even if you look at a B12 deficiency, that can lead to a lot of anger.
And of course, then if you suggest that to them, they'd get even more angry. Liere, have you had to give some thought to security now when you speak in public?
Yeah, I mean, that's the sad part, is that I can't speak without security now. And you just have to take it seriously when people threaten to throw acid in your face and they threaten to kill you. And I've gotten those kinds of notes to my house, so they've made it clear that they know where I live. And so it's just the new normal now, and so I can't speak without security when I go places. In fact, sometimes I even have to be escorted in and out of the building because you just never know what's going to happen. And it's a drag. And this was not what I expected at all. And even as somebody who spent 20 years in that world, it just never occurred to me it was going to be at this level. I think part of the problem is that people like Pam and I, we're apostates. You know, we were once true believers and now we have betrayed the faith. And people don't take well to having their religion questioned. And
but you and I aren't the only ones. There's a growing number of recovering vegans coming forward. Susan Schenck and Denise Minger. There's so many people coming forward saying that the diet just backfires on them.
Yeah, and a lot of those people receive the same kind of threats. Molly Katzen, who was, you know, the Moosewood cookbook, same thing. She's gotten death threats from... And these people just sound insane when they write to you. I mean, you're scared because they don't seem stable.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, the diet is partly responsible for that. Part of it is that kind of religious fervor. There's a fundamentalist attitude that a lot of them take on, but I remember what it felt like. You know, my emotional state, it was almost impossible to keep, you know, a stable, happy mental mood. You know, there's the lack of tryptophan, there's the lack of saturated fat. Your brain simply can't produce that, you know, sort of the state that humans should be in.
Lier, you're just getting into something that I want to get into in a bigger way. What was life like for, 19 years as a vegan? And Pam's been through this. You've been through this. I want to spend much of our next segment for just 4 or 5 minutes just focusing on what was life like as a vegetarian and how do you feel now that you've been rescued from that? And then we'll get into why. And, of course, the answer is nutrition. We'll be back with author Lier Keith in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
You can go back 4 million years to the very beginning of the human race, and there is no question that we were hunters. This is what we ate for literally 4 million years. And it's the reason we have really big brains. We have the largest brain of any primate, and we have the smallest digestive tract, which is to say, how are you going to feed that brain? I mean, our brains use 25% of the energy, our energy needs. And you're not going to get that out of plants. There just isn't enough energy. So it's quite clear that we must have been eating meat to get brains that are this large.
So, Pam, Colleen, what we heard in that clip from author Lier Keith, who we're having a conversation with this morning, is that if you're a vegetarian, you're not feeding not only your body, but you're not feeding your brain. You and Lier went through a very dark period in your lives when you were a vegetarian. Let's compare notes. You first.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I notice and what I think back on now is the symptoms that tend to happen very gradually with vegetarians. So first their memories start to get weak, then they start to get cold hands and cold feet because their thyroid, of course, becomes weakened due to the fact they're not eating enough animal fat in the diet. Then the sleep disorders begin, mood problems get exacerbated, so things like depression, anxiety, fatigue all end up getting to be very debilitating in the end, and so it's a progression. But Lier, I lasted 9 years. Lier lasted 19 years, which to me is just remarkable.
You mean she's more stubborn than you are? Lier, why weren't you listening? You're a smart woman. Did it take you 19 years to figure this out?
Well, you know, you go to the doctor and complain, And nobody ever said, what do you eat?
Mm-hmm.
Like there's nothing out there that says everything's in the opposite direction. You're supposed to be eating this high-carb, low-fat, plant-based diet. That's the diet du jour. That's the diet that's going to produce perfect health in people. And so, you know, I thought I was doing the right thing. And like a lot of people who enter this world, you know, it's very ideological. And how could it be that the righteous diet would hurt me? It simply seems impossible. Because you want God to be a just God. You know, you want the correct thing, the politically right thing, the righteous thing, to be the thing that produces health in humans. So if you get into this from an ideological, you know, kind of trajectory, there's no way to question it because your whole universe falls apart.
I want to ask both of you, before we get to the bottom of the hour, what was the moment in which you had that epiphany when you went, oh, my goodness, I've been wrong?
I think it was the moment where I started to crave eggs. And I said, oh, I can't eat eggs. Eggs are bad for me. And that's probably, that was my epiphany. I started to eat eggs gradually and then grass-fed beef and pastured eggs and pastured chicken and so on. And
what about you, Lierre?
The moment for me was when I went to, I just have a long list of health problems that, you know, are never going to be resolved after doing this to myself. I have degenerative disease. I have an autoimmune disease, blah, blah, blah. But the moment for me was when I went to see a Qigong healer. It's a form of traditional Chinese medicine, similar to acupuncture. And he just looked at me in complete horror and basically said, you're going to die if you keep doing this. And I knew he was right. And I just needed somebody that I respected to say it to me. I couldn't get there on my own, but to have somebody, you know, this wonderful, you know, old man who had been doing this his whole life and was clearly quite skilled at this, you know, beautiful art of Chinese medicine that I believed in. And so to have somebody with that kind of stature in my eyes finally say, you will kill yourself if you keep on. There's nothing left. You have no energy in your body. You're half dead. You know, it's over if you don't stop this. That was the moment when I was finally able to, you know, let myself start thinking, okay, he's right.
One other quick question before the bottom of the hour from both of you. If Pam Colleen from all those years ago were listening right now, or if Lierre Keith from all those years ago were listening to the radio right now, what is her state of mind? Oh, those silly people, they're just so uninformed.
Mm-hmm. Well, the brain fog and the fuzzy feeling in the brain, all of these symptoms are very common among vegetarians. Unfortunately, they mistake it as being something that's very spiritual. But their brains are just in a trance. They're in la-la land.
So what am I right now in London, Ontario, vegetarians listening to this discussion, mm-hmm. are they even listening? Or do they have their hands on their hips saying, Andy and Ryan, move on to the next subject, because this is just...
Well, I think we have to reason with them and say, you know, that really vegetarianism came to be because of an overpopulation problem. The birth of a vegan diet came to be in order to kill people's sex drives. I mean, if you look back in the history of vegetarianism and veganism, you'll see that the root of these diets didn't happen because of health at all. And so to determine whether or not a diet is healthy, you must ask these five questions. You must say, does this diet prove to me that the couples are fertile, that babies are healthy, that there's no chronic disease or mental disorders in society, that the aging are aging gracefully, and that the senior citizens are still productive members of society. In other words, you must look generationally in order to determine whether or not a diet is healthy. You can't just look at a guy like Bill Clinton and say, oh, he's been following a pseudo-vegan diet for a couple of years now and claims to be healthy. That doesn't tell me he's healthy whatsoever. You need to look generationally.
And Lierre, if the Lierre from years ago had been listening to this program, would you have both hands over your ears?
I would be feeling complete emotional terror. Because the thing about being a vegan is that it's not what you eat. It becomes who you are. So to question the diet, it feels like it's an assault on your sense of self. Because it really, it becomes that profound of an experience. You know, it's who I am. It's not what I eat. And this would be a terrifying conversation for me to hear. Because even a few years into the diet, my health had already started to fail. And to somehow have to question that, I don't know that I would have been capable of it. I think it took me until I had ground myself completely, you know, into the dirt, to be able to question it for that reason. So I do hope that if there's people out there who are listening, who are experimenting with a vegan diet, don't get so attached to it that you can't question it.
And as we go to a break, because we have a news update for a couple of minutes, what are you suggesting to the vegans and the vegetarians out there? Just go over to the fridge, get a nice big chunk of broccoli, and just nibble on it till you calm down, because when we come back, we are going to talk to Lierre Keith about why getting off a vegetarian diet has gone so far in restoring her health, and why Pam Colleen is a healthy, vibrant woman today without all the huge medical issues she had when she was a vegetarian. So, broccoli babes, we're going to go at it in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
You know, the other thing that you find in the archaeological record is that humans are long and tall and strong, and they keep all their teeth and their bones are disease-free until you hit agriculture. And then suddenly everybody shrinks 6 inches and they lose their teeth and their bones are riddled with disease.
Whoa.
And we have a concept, the diseases of civilization. There is no such thing as the diseases of hunter-gatherers.
Folks, I often meet people, and this is common for people in radio. Oh, Andy, you're not at all, you don't look at all like what I thought you did. I said, so you thought I was short and fat and dumpy. Pam, you know that I'm 6'3". I happen to have
tall and lean
Dutch genes. And the survey showed that the Dutch people are the tallest in the world, by and large. And I've always put that down to, you know, a good standard of living in Holland and good food. In the clip that we just heard of author Lierre Keith, she's saying that the healthiest people who've ever lived are not living now. That they lived some time ago.
And that the transition in our health happened around agriculture. So that's what I want to talk to Lierre about right now, is what happened when we switched from being hunter-gatherer to agriculture? What was it about agriculture that started to lead to all sorts of physical degeneration?
Well, there's two problems, two sort of main categories of what's wrong with the agricultural diet. And so the first category is what's missing, and then the second category is what is there too much of? And so, you know, to take it in reverse order, there's way too much sugar, essentially. When you're eating a grain-based diet, it really does nothing but carbohydrate. And you can call it complex carbohydrate if you want, but at the end of the day, every single one of those molecules is broken down into simple sugar to be absorbed into your bloodstream. So it's a huge rush of sugar every single time you eat. And the human body simply wasn't, you know, didn't evolve to eat that much sugar. We don't have a good mechanism for dealing with it, and it slowly destroys, it sort of rots us from the inside out. And this is why, you know, diabetes is a disease of civilization, why cancer is a disease of civilization. Hunter-gatherers don't get cancer. And one thing we know about cancer is that its food is sugar. And, you know, that's why agriculturalists get cancer. And so there's way too much sugar, and then the grain itself, all seeds, whether it's, you know, nuts or beans or, you know, grains, whatever, they're all seeds. And one of the main problems is that the omega-6 and omega-3 ratio is off. So you're going to get way too many omega-6s eating a grain-based diet. And as most people know at this point, the omega-6s create all kinds of inflammation throughout the body. And, you know, you need a little inflammation, so you need a little bit of omega-6. But I don't know how it is in Canada, but in the United States, there's some people who, you know, when they're tested for omega-3s, there's literally no omega-3s in their bodies at all.
Lierre, do you mind if I just jump in and ask you for an example? Because sometimes I hear our audience screaming, how could she say, because you dropped a little bombshell in the middle of that, hunter-gatherers don't get cancer. Give us an example.
Well, this is all over the anthropological literature and all over the medical literature. Not so recently, because, of course, there's only 46 tribes now of hunter-gatherers left on the planet. But even as late as 1950, you could find in the Canadian Medical Journal statements like, we all know the Inuit don't get cancer. And it was just completely accepted because they didn't get cancer. And that would be traditional people eating their traditional food, which is, you know, mostly sea mammals and fish. And they didn't get cancer. And this was something that was noted over and over and over again throughout the 18th and the 19th centuries, particularly as British and French and other European doctors were sort of floating around the world in various, you know, imperialist navies, but they would, you know, come across people in other locations in the world who were still eating, you know, traditional hunter-gatherer kinds of diets, and they were amazed because they did not find cancer. And then, you know, the imperialists would win, and the native food supplies would be replaced by, you know, what are called the displacing foods of modern commerce. Weston Price.
Now, Lierre, what is? Can you comment on the statement that the vegetarians always make, is that, you know, you can't feed the world on a meat-based diet, that it must be a plant-based diet, and can you kind of help them with that issue?
Yeah, you know, that takes a little explaining, but, you know, to put it very bluntly, nothing we do is sustainable at 7 billion or 8 billion people. Okay, nothing that we do is going to feed that many people. The only reason that we have as much grain as we do today is because we are on drawdown. And we have been on drawdown for 10,000 years. And the first thing that agriculture draws down is the soil itself, because it's an inherently destructive activity. So at this point, the planet's been skinned alive. And by 1950, we were essentially out of topsoil, because that's what agriculture does. So since 1950, what we've been eating is fossil fuel. After World War II, the scientists had figured out how to create nitrogen, a usable form of nitrogen, to make bombs, and that was turned toward, quote, peacetime uses. I consider agriculture a war, so that's why I put the quotes around peacetime, a war against the living world. And so since we were out of topsoil, they applied nitrogen fertilizer instead. And what that created was a very temporary, glut of grain across the planet. And we are still creating that surplus of grain by eating fossil fuel. It's oil and gas. That's where that food is coming from. And if you are eating grain, you are eating oil on a stalk. This is not sustainable. So all these numbers about how much grain is being produced and how many people could be fed, it's got a limit on it. You know, this was not a plan with the future. We're already on the downside of that curve, the peak oil curve. And, the day is going to come when it simply isn't feasible to get the oil out of the ground anymore. And I don't know what all these people think we're going to eat at that point because, you can't reproduce it. It doesn't grow on its own. You know, fossil fuel is fossil fuel. You know, it was stored underground for a few million years. We figured out how to get it out. And that's where the food is coming from. So this is called drawdown because mm-hmm. these are resources that are not going to come again. We're drawing down these reserves. So the fossil soil is gone, the fossil fuel is soon going to be gone, and that's what creates these agricultural surpluses.
So what is sustainable, Lear?
Well, the real question is, what can the planet actually provide? And since agriculture actually destroys ecosystems, and indeed entire continents, this was never a plan with the future. You know, it always was going to reach the end point of, there is no more land to take. At this point, 98% of the prairies, or the old-growth forests have been destroyed, and 99% of the world's prairies have been destroyed. And this is all in the service of agriculture. Agriculture takes what it wants, and what it's taken is every continent that could be colonized. So to my mind, what we have to do is repair what's been destroyed. So that means letting the forests and the prairies return. And then we need to take our place again as members of those soil-building communities.
Lear, I take out you don't get a lot of Christmas cards from farmer friends.
Well, I do, because most of the farmers are, these are the people that are they're essentially, they've been turned into serfs, by the six grain the corporations that control the world food supply. There are six of them. They're the grain cartels, we call them. And the farmers are really the people who are under the screws. They, no matter how much grain they produce, they can never make a profit. They can never keep their heads above water because those six corporations have a monopoly, and they're able to drive the price well below the cost of production.
Okay, this is getting a little deep. I want to bring it back to the key issue, the vegetarian myth. Now, Pam, I was asking you about, during the break, about real people that you meet, vegetarians,
mm-hmm.
who fight with you
mm-hmm.
because they don't want to let go of what they believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then they have this epiphany. Christine wants to jump in to share her story. Hi, Christine.
Hi there.
I wonder if, just in the course of a minute, because we don't have a lot of time, if you could just share what happened to you.
Well, it wasn't actually what happened to me personally, because I was never, thankfully, a vegan or a vegetarian. But when I had my second child 6 years ago now, she's 6 years old, I was following the advice of a naturopath who basically told me not to give her any animal products before she turned a year old, but that turned out to be quite disastrous for her, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And what had happened to her was she was very underweight. She was only about 13 pounds at 9 months old, mm-hmm. and she was deficient in zinc and iron, and several years later, she is still dealing with a lot of deficiencies, and her teeth were crumbling out of her mouth with holes and, quite a few things.
Mm-hmm. That's what I see happen with vegetarians. Even 20 years after they've relinquished the diet, I will see terrible teeth in vegetarians. It's very common.
Wow, what a story, Christine. You must be angry inside over the advice that you got.
I am angry, but, I didn't know any better at the time, and obviously that naturopath didn't know any better at the time, and the good news is that we do know better now, and we have changed our diets, and things have turned around, but
What's your advice, yeah, before we let you go? What's your advice to our listeners this morning?
You know, I admire Lear Keith and the Weston Price Foundation and what Pam is doing, and I just really encourage people to look into the Weston Price Foundation and just look into what traditional people ate. And if you want to be healthy, look at what traditional people did when they were healthy.
Give us 30 seconds. Give us 30 seconds on that.
30 seconds on that. Okay.
What should we be?
It's what Pam has been telling listeners for ages now. Traditional food, what we've always been eating, whole foods, animal products, you know, things that are found in nature the way that they are, and that they're not processed, basically.
And you buy your food from local farmers?
Absolutely, as much as I can.
Fantastic.
And if it's not against the wall in the grocery store, you don't buy it?
I try to avoid grocery stores as much as possible. I try to go to the farm. I try to go to farmers markets. You know, as much as possible.
Okay, Christine, I appreciate you sharing your story. Good to take a short break in our final segment. We'll try to wrap it up and put a little bow on it. The book is called The Vegetarian Myth. We're talking to two recovering vegetarians. It is not all about broccoli. We'll be back in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. The book is called The Vegetarian Myth. Let me read a shocking paragraph from this book written by our guest, Keith. Page 133. In modern North America, 40% of 9-year-old girls have dieted. And I'm thinking, I can hardly believe that. 40% of 9-year-old girls have dieted, and 9% of them have vomited to lose weight. 81% of 10-year-old girls have dieted, and the number one wish of girls 11 to 17 years old is to lose weight. Anorexia has the highest mortality rate of any mental illness, up to 20%. 70% of women are on a diet. 70%. And 40% are continually gaining and losing weight. Lear, those figures to me are beyond shocking.
Yeah, it's pretty horrible. And this is one of the reasons that I really am very upset about the book Skinny Bitch, because they're just teaching girls to have eating disorders. And they're using a vegan diet as part of the, you know, part of their arsenal against the female body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get parents all the time who talk to me about their teenage girls who are following this diet, and they see a lot of mood issues, a lot of problems ensuing.
What does the title of that book say, Lear? Skinny Bitch.
It just seems so misogynist to me. I can't even imagine why it got published. You know, so of course you want to be skinny because, you know, God forbid that you should acknowledge the female fat cell. I just want to point out that there would not be animals if it wasn't for the female fat cell. And up until a very recent point in history, the female fat cell was something that was celebrated. It was seen as, you know, the essence of sensuality and as you know, physical appealing. You can look at all the great masters of painting, you know, up until about 1920, and that was what they painted when they painted beauty. And all of that flipped when women got the vote. That was the exact moment when suddenly, you know, this horrible standard of it's got skinnier and skinnier, which, you know, you could look at it politically and just say, well, one way or another, patriarchy's going to get you. Fine, you can have the vote, but you're all going to hate your bodies now.
I think we're coming back from that, Lear. I've seen more and more stories about the skinny models are out now, the really skinny ones.
I really hope so, because it's just been so destructive for women. And there's a nutritional component, too, that when you start dieting and you start denying yourself some of the basic foodstuffs, you know, on a low tryptophan diet, which, of course, is a vegan diet, you cannot get tryptophan out of plant foods.
Lear, I have to ask you this, a favor, if I could. In the last 2 minutes of the show, we always ask our guests to give us a takeaway. Put it in a little box and put a little bow on everything you've said in this hour and in your book, The Vegetarian Myth.
For people who are embracing or thinking about a vegan or vegetarian diet, I want them to know that you can have the same moral grounding and the same ethical framework, but choose a diet that's more appropriate to human health and that, in fact, would restore the planet, that would restore the prairies and the forests and the wetlands. So there's a lot of information out there, and I just hope that you will find it before you do irreparable harm to your body. There's a whole generation of us out here who tried this long-term. We ended up permanently damaged. So please listen before it's too late.
Now, you have a new book out, Lear, and I have to admit I haven't read it as yet. It's called Deep Green Resistance, Strategy to Save the Planet. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, every day 200 species go extinct, and there was just a report put out yesterday by the UN about how, you know, within this century, life on Earth may be over because of the destructive activities of the human race right now, particularly burning fossil fuel and overpopulation. And our book is about the problem of civilization, this pattern of living that involves constant overshoot and degradation, and some strategies we think that would be appropriate. But I seriously think the only hope we have is the restoration of the prairies. Prairie plants are so good at building topsoil that they sequester vast amounts of carbon. And to put it all, in one sentence, if we could repair even 75% of the world's grasslands, we could sequester all the carbon that's been released since the beginning of the industrial age in about 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So we would be down to about 330 parts per million. And right there, you've got a living planet if we could do that. And it means we need to stop doing agriculture, and we need to let the planet repair.
Mm-hmm.
Lier, Keith, what's it going to say on your tombstone, Lier? I'm so sorry I ate all that broccoli.
What would it say? I think it would say she kept trying.
Yeah, persevere, right?
Yeah.
You have to today. There's so much misinformation out there, Lier. I think that it's important to look at the facts, look at the history, and determine healthy eating that way, because the misinformation is certainly very thick.
Okay, you have a website, Lier?
Yeah, LierKeith.com, which is easy if you know how to spell my name.
Yes, and Lier is like Pierre. You change the P to an L, and you got Lier Keith. Lier, it's been very gracious of you to spend this time with us, and we thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for your work. It was great.
Thank you.
And Pam, to all those girls who are so confused about what to eat, you would say?
I would tell them to go back to eating the basics. Eat the way your ancestors ate. And actually, if you can imagine the way they ate before World War II, you'll get a good grasp of what a healthy diet is.
Three squares.
Three square meals. Don't be red meat phobic, egg phobic, butter phobic. Don't, just get over those phobias.
Okay, and I get this every time I'm off the air. How do they reach your website?
It's PamKilleen.com, and I'm going to do a book signing at Chapters South on Saturday, June the 16th.
Okay, so not this Saturday, but a week away.
That's
folks,
right.
Pam, thank you so much.
Thanks, Andy.
11 o'clock news just around the corner. When we come back, we're going to switch lanes on the highway and talk about this court decision yesterday involving truckers and how fast they can go. Are you and I in more danger on the 401 because of it? When we come back, we're going to gear up for that in just a moment right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.